Hi folks, this is Harley, the host of the PW Torch Tuesday livecast, Talking Honor. Before we get into this week's episode, a little word of notice. Emily Fear, my co-host, and I sat down for an hour and a half talk about this week's ROH television episode, after which it was revealed that my microphone did not record the latter 80% of our conversation. Emily was recorded in full. Nothing I said after the first 5 minutes made tape. We unfortunately ran out of time. We were unable to record a full other episode or figure out what to do. So I've cobbled together a bit of a patchwork episode here featuring the bulk of Emily's thoughts and commentary from this week's podcast, along with a few of my re-recorded segments sort of slotted in just to try to make sense of things. If it feels a little scattered, if it feels shorter than usual, this is why. Technical difficulties, but we wanted to provide you with some sort of content this week. We didn't want to leave you out in the lurch entirely. So please make do with this weird patchwork episode that I've stitched together like some sort of Frankenstein's monster. Next week we'll be back in full force with all our usual banter and bad jokes. In the meantime, this is Talking Honor. Thanks for listening. Hello, people. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. My name is Harley R. Paget. I co-host this show. I co-host the Torch VIP show, Elite Repeat. I co-host the Torch VIP show, the Mae Young podcast. I contribute occasionally to the Wednesday livecast, PWT Talks NXT. And I do written reports covering Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. All of that is what I do. I'm joined by my co-host, Emily Fear.
Hello. How's it going, Harley?
It's a really rainy day in Southern Ontario.
Same. It's been raining off and on, nonstop, pretty much since Saturday here in Pittsburgh. And today we got a little bit of relief. I think it's not raining right now, which is nice. But yeah, Saturday started raining in the afternoon, did not stop all day yesterday, most of the day today. It's been rainy and cold, actually. We went from 90 degree days last week to now like 60 degrees, which is insane.
Yes, we went from a 44 degree day last week to 16 degrees.
That sounds so absurd.
It might be the same thing. I don't know. Yes, they say it's the remnants of Tropical Depression Gordon.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, depressed Gord. What a heel.
Poor Gordon. Well, he's making us all suffer along with him, I guess.
So this week, we only have Ring of Honor television to talk about. This is a, wow, what a change.
Yeah.
We got a one-hour episode of TV and that's it.
Yeah, and I would say it's a letdown, except this was a fantastic episode of TV to focus a podcast on, and was not at all a total letdown from last week coming in here talking nonstop about All In.
And the fact that they had a stellar half-hour Iron Man match, they wanted to make sure we could see almost all of it on television, forced them to do some interesting artistic choices as well, which kind of freshened up the viewer experience, I found.
Yeah, I really liked the, like, in media res, like, jump start to this episode where we just coming right in on Frankie Kazarian versus Mark Briscoe.
Yeah, so we'll talk about all that. Up first, though, we have listener mail from our listener, Philip Bagley. He wrote in, he doesn't want to let All In go. We are ready to move on, mm-hmm. But no. Philip says, I love the psychology of Flip Gordon versus Jay Lethal at All In, and how through the comedy spots and tributes, the match still made sense. Toward the end of the match, when Lethal was on the top rope, he was Black Machismo. Flip elbowed his shoulder 3 times, and Lethal was Lethal again. If Flip had elbowed him twice, or 4 times, then Lethal would have been Machismo, according to the story. I appreciate that attention to detail within a match. It probably would have gone unnoticed to a lot of people, and they made sure they got the spot right. Great work by those two.
Yeah, I didn't really notice that. Granted, I admit I haven't actually gotten to rewatch All In yet. It's been one of those weeks I killed my All In blues with a bunch of other wrestling, especially New Japan Pro Wrestling, which has there's a tour again, the Destruction Tour is back. So I'm focused on that and not necessarily didn't have the time to finally rewatch All In, which I'm still planning on doing. But because of where I was situated and, you know, the excitement of the match itself and the excitement of All In itself, I was missing some of the finer details. So that's really cool, Philip. I'm going to have to go back and look for that.
So the opening to this week's episode, kind of wacky. We open in medias res, like you said, in the middle of the ring, and it's Mark Briscoe and Frankie Kazarian just throwing hands. We're told that the bell has already rung, that we're right into the action. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this opening any sort of wrestling show before, but it definitely had the intensity that right away at the start of the episode, we're going, okay, we're into this. Let's get going.
Yeah, that was cool. I don't think I've watched an ROH episode where this was the case. I love that feeling, though. It really did start this episode off on the right note of energy, the right way to enter something that is going to be fairly intense. I always kind of enter Iron Man matches with a great sense of expectation, and ROH has done a nice job, really nice job, actually, of being able to of building up this match over the past several weeks. So just kind of putting icing on it, like starting the episode right in the midst of the action of this opening match, really nice way to kind of get the at-home audience watching a little bit on their toes right away.
And it worked because it was the Briscoes and SCU. It's this heated feud that's been going on for a month and a half now. We've seen them brawl multiple times. We've seen them engage in beatdowns of each other. So it worked on that level. If they had opened like this for a random match, like Flip Gordon versus Josh Woods, wouldn't have had quite the same effect as this one did, where we don't need a backstory here. We know why these guys don't like each other. We know that they're going to fight. So here they are. They're fighting.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously the feud is really heated up, and also there's a benefit of this pre-existing issue, this ongoing feud that requires no storytelling prior to the match. So we can go right into it. Those of us who are following the story at home can already we already know what's happening. We expected this match to happen because we saw Daniels versus Jay recently. So we knew this match was likely to happen. And so seeing it makes a lot of sense. We don't need any kind of entrances to tell us the story that we already know.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
And it's interesting. It's always interesting watching Kaz and Mark Briscoe wrestle a singles match these days, because we don't get to see it very often. Mark had a singles run when Jay was the world champion, and we saw him do a number of things there. But I don't know if I don't know if we've ever gotten a chance to really see Kazarian wrestle any sort of prolonged, sustained singles career. I don't know. I mean, I was going into this one wondering, does he even have a finishing move? If he does, what is it? If he tries to go for it, I don't even know if I'm going to know that he's attempting his finishing move.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. It was kind of the fun thing about watching Kaz as a singles wrestler, kind of trying to pick out things that maybe he was doing in SCU, and maybe those are the singles moves that he brings into the six-man team, or into his tag team with Daniels. But nothing signature to me, but he looked good. Some of the things that he pulled on Briscoe, I'm looking at my notes, the straitjacket electric chair drop into a pin looked really, really tight. The final sequence with the crucifix roll up, happened fast, but I liked it a lot. I was struck by Kaz, his, very competent as a singles wrestler. I forgot that I don't see him wrestle as a singles wrestler that often.
So the opening contest, followed by a number of short little videos, kind of like a recap of what's been happening lately in Ring of Honor. We see Cody and the Young Bucks winning the six-man titles. We saw the development of the Chris Sabin Punishment Martinez feud, Jeff Cobb's debut. We got a little bit of last week after we went off the air between Silas Young and Bully Ray, where Silas is berating Bully for walking out on him during the match, and Bully's sitting in the chair looking very petulant, kind of like a young child, kind of like your president, just looking very, I don't want to listen to this, and I'm not interested in this sort of thing. But all of this was sort of new stuff that we haven't seen ROH do before, these kind of like three little recap packages all crammed together into one little space. And I wonder if it was a conscious decision, because Lethal and Gresham's Iron Man match had been getting so much hype and so much buzz. I'd been hearing from people on social media, anybody who was there at the taping said, oh, you're gonna want to watch this match. This is a great match. Best ROH television match this year. So maybe there was the idea that maybe we're going to get some first-time viewers or some occasional part-time viewers checking in for the Iron Man match, and this is our chance to hook them at the same time, remind them what else is going on in the world of ROH by focusing on Cody and the Bucks, Jeff Cobb, some of the bigger names that will make you go, oh, okay, Jeff Cobb's in ROH now? I got to maybe start watching more on a more regular basis.
That makes a ton of sense, considering that an Iron Man match is a really accessible point to come in. Like, it's actually kind of surprisingly accessible point to come into as a new viewer, because, you know, they do enough storytelling, the commentary team and the promo packages do enough storytelling to tell you kind of history that these guys have in the ring. And then the Iron Man match itself is just like, it's, you know, self-explanatory and it takes up the bulk of the episode, so you don't have to follow a bunch of different storylines. Having a recap package like this, I think you're onto something there. I think it's a really inviting way for just curious folks who are watching this match, watching this episode, to like get in possibly to some of the other storylines that are happening.
Then the rest of the show is dedicated to the Iron Man match, 30-minute Iron Man match for the ROH World Championship. It's Jason Lethal versus John Gresham. They're in Gresham's hometown of Atlanta, Georgia. This thing has been built up. Before we even get into the match, I mean, I feel like we should talk about the commentators, because we've talked a lot on the show about how good Ian Riccaboni is. I don't know if we give Colt Cabana as much credit on commentary as he deserves. The opening section of this match before the first commercial break, Lethal and Gresham were very slow, very methodical, feeling each other out. Nobody wants to make a mistake. Nobody wants to make that first big bold move in case it backfires. You know, there's some lockups, they're into the ropes, they break, they're going for an arm lock, another person switches out of it. Very slow paced, very feeling each other out, because they know they've got a half hour ahead of them. And Cabana and Riccaboni totally matched this on commentary. They spoke in a quiet, sort of reserved voice, like you might hear somebody calling the Olympics or something like that. Their tone matched the pace in the ring fully. And Cabana was really good here, I thought, because he talked about his history wrestling Jay Lethal in the past, what that was like for him personally. He also raised some questions, like, who did Jonathan Gresham go to asking for advice going into this match? This is arguably the biggest match of Gresham's career. He must have gone to somebody. He must have asked somebody for advice. So who did he talk to? What's he been planning? And I think Riccaboni said that Gresham was very guarded in the build to this match too. He didn't do a lot of interviews or a lot of press hyping it up. He was very trying to keep his cards close to his chest to have that advantage. I mean, so all of that I loved, especially in this first section. And it's one of the reasons that I love Riccaboni and Cabana in general. I know a lot of people have issues with Matt Stryker and Vampiro in Lucha Underground, but for me it's the same thing. It feels like these guys genuinely like each other. They're genuinely friends. They enjoy working together, calling these matches together, and they probably hang out outside of the ring. You don't get that in a lot of other promotions, especially not in somewhere like WWE, where it feels like not only are they not best friends on commentary, but it seems like they genuinely dislike each other and they're forced to work together out there. And that's not enjoyable to listen to, is it? I mean, it's like you're hanging out with your buddies watching this wrestling match when you tune into this, and it just makes the whole experience so much more enjoyable.
So oftentimes when you're watching other promotions, you'll have the kind of classic team up of commentary teams where it's like, you know, one guy's more straight laced and fact based and is going to give you the play by play, the move by move. The other guy is kind of the heel commentator and, you know, is celebrating some of the not so great stuff that's at, like the cheating ends of it and things like that. What I like about, or is, you know, just kind of snarkier, meaner, etc. What I like about ROH's team up of Rick Abani and Colt Cabana is that neither guy is the bad guy, and one guy plays it a little bit more fact-based and a little bit more like in-depth with like the history of things, the history of the matchups, the like references that he drops in. And then you've got Colt, who is not the heel commentator, not the jerk commentator, but rather the like the kind of guy that you would probably just want to watch wrestling with on a general basis. Like, Colt reminds me of the people I enjoy going to live shows with in his commentary. And I think that's actually, you know, that's intended and intentional and like a really nice like thing that you, a really nice personality that you don't often see in a wrestling like commentary team. Honestly, one of the things I love best about like Ian and Colt's like back and forth is it feels very lived in. It feels like they have been working together for a while, which they have. And I want a commentary team to feel like that. I want that kind of natural pace because that only adds to the element of excitement when you have a match like this, because then their excitement sounds completely authentic. It sounds like it sounds like two people experiencing a moment together and feeding off of each other's energy and the energy in the room and getting amped from that. And you won't get that from a commentary team that doesn't have that lived in chemistry. And it only builds the energy for people like us who are watching at home. So yeah, I think it's a treat. And the commentary in this match was fantastic. Like, they didn't overstate things. They didn't talk through the whole thing. They let the match breathe a bit. They were giving it a nice tone. They were taking it like they're giving it a nice serious tone without like making it sound like grave, which could, you know, be a little bit, you know, kind of go too far into the serious spectrum. And I think also, again, like Colt's really good at keeping a tone that is like both like, you know, noticing of important stuff and comment and making comment on it, but also not like making everything sound way too serious, which, you know, can happen. I love the bits and pieces of Colt's own biography that kind of directly correlate with what we're seeing in the ring. It's just something about his, like, both, you know, his history as a wrestler and his active, you know, status as a wrestler that really help, like, in moments like these. And I loved his, you know, talk about, like, wrestling a long match with Jay Lethal and, you know, needing 2 days to recover, whereas Lethal could have gone for 40 more minutes. And, you know, just what that sells. He's really good at putting other guys over just by being able to, like, refer to experiences with them. And in a match like this, you really want the guys in that ring to feel, you know, larger than life and to feel like they're coming in there with a tremendous amount of power, especially Jay Lethal coming in there as the world title holder. I think Colt does a really good job of putting Lethal over just in the way that he, you know, references, you know, having matches against Lethal himself.
We go to commercial break. We come back and it's section two of the match, as I'm sort of thinking of it in my head. And the pace is picked up during the break for sure. It's not a slow feeling out process anymore. There's some back suplexes, there's some hip tosses, and there is some chopping, a lot of chopping, a hell of a lot of chopping. It's this whole middle section before the next commercial break is basically just the guys chopping the heck out of one another.
Oh my gosh, the chopping. There was one, it was one chop on from Lethal onto Gresham that I thought it was going to like send Gresham out of the ring. I mean, there's some size difference there that really is interesting when you're talking about like strikes and chops and yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I have the notes here about Gresham, like just chopping the heck out of Lethal. And because of the reach really like hitting him like square under the neck. I have to tell you, when they announced 15 minutes had gone by, I couldn't believe it.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk. Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
We get our second commercial break. We come back, and again, the story of the match has kind of changed. Now Gresham's in control. Lethal has an injured arm. He's nursing it, but Gresham's picking away at it. He sort of forces Lethal down on the mat, and he's just picking away at his body. One thing after another, targeting and working away. We get this beautiful segment where, I want to say for a good 6 or 7 minutes straight, Gresham does not let go of Lethal's body once. He has Lethal down on the mat. He's holding onto the ankle, and then he grabs onto the arm and lets go of the ankle because he has the arm. Then he goes from the arm to the head, but he never lets go. Lethal manages to fire back up. Both men get to their feet. Lethal is firing away with chops on Gresham, and Gresham is still holding on, won't let go of the wrist. 6 minutes, 7 minutes straight, Gresham will not physically separate from Lethal for even half of a second, and that's just masterful, and it just tells you so much about Gresham's character and his in-ring style in that one little sequence.
Yeah, because if you are a submission-based wrestler, if you are a chain wrestler, if you are going to be doing that like kind of that like British style, you understand that the thing that you need the most is physical access to your opponent. And that physical access is gained by like not losing that connection. Because every time you lose that connection, you lose your ability to manipulate limbs, you lose your ability to do as Gresham does, like work the body in the unique way that he can. And you also like, you have to remember that Gresham's got a size disadvantage here. So losing that control means giving Lethal enormous amount of room to like use every bit of the size that he has and space that he has to take over Gresham physically. So Gresham needs to maintain that physical control to be able to like substantiate any chance of being able to get the upper hand or maintaining an upper hand. There's a sense of timing here because especially as they're getting closer and closer, they're inching towards the 25-minute mark at this point. Like Lethal can't necessarily afford to do his like trifecta of suicide dives. He needs one very effective one to try and get what he needs.
It's not until around the 26-minute mark in this match that we get our first decision, but it does come eventually when Jonathan Gresham manages to lock in the octopus. Lethal already has an injured arm from the previous 26 minutes. Now Gresham has his patented signature finishing move locked in on Lethal. And as if that's not enough, he also takes the time while Lethal is stretched in the octopus. Gresham raises his free hand and just starts wailing away at Lethal's head. Just starts slapping him in the face and hammering away at him until Lethal has no choice but to tap.
Yeah, just hammering away. My gosh, that is like he's got a brutal octopus, and I've seen this now in like twice in person. So like Gresham's got a really especially fast and like harsh octopus hold. But man, the added wailing away, that man looked brutal. And so when Lethal is forced to tap, that does not feel at all contrived. That feels completely earned.
Gresham is so shocked that he was able to make Jay tap out, that he was able to pick up the first win, that he just stands there, stunned, while the clock keeps running. And, I mean, that's fine. He's got the lead anyway at this point. But maybe he could have picked up another win in there. Who knows? It's hard to say. And maybe he was too shocked to take advantage, and he gave Lethal a bit of a breather, because Jay came back with a vengeance. He unloaded on Gresham. He went to work quickly on the challenger, then it's the figure four, and Gresham is screaming in agony as the clock is running low. He's reaching for the ropes. He's trying to pull his own knee pad off, anything to relieve the pressure, but he can't do it. And 2 minutes later, Gresham is forced to tap as well. It's tied up 1-1 at the 28-minute mark. We have 2 minutes left on the clock. They both go for pinfalls. Pinfall, kick out, roll through, kick out, backslide, kick out, kick out, kick out, and the clock runs down. Bobby Cruz announces the time has expired and it is a 1-1 draw. And that could be the end of it. You know, Gresham was the challenger. He needed to beat the champion. He failed to. Jay Lethal retains. But these guys are baby faces. These guys are heroes and good people. The microphone is slid in the ring. Gresham says, "We didn't come all this way to have it end like this. I want 5 more minutes." The fans instantly respond, 5 more minutes. And I loved Lethal's body language and his expression here. He looks so tired, so exhausted, and just he wants nothing more than to go into the locker room, have a shower, eat a protein bar, and lie down. He doesn't want to wrestle anymore. He wants to call it a night, but he takes the microphone and he says, "Start the clock." And there we go. 5 minutes extra, sudden death overtime, first pinfall or submission takes it away.
Gresham keeps targeting Lethal's arm. He's got that bridge pin for the two count into the first minute. It's like rapid fire. They're pulling out some really great, pulling out like some of the best moves you're going to see them do. And it's in the first minute of this 5 minute sequence.
And we still get some good back and forth. Lethal hits the Hail to the King elbow drop. Gresham barely kicks out. Gresham jumps on Lethal's back for the sleeper hold, the same way that he beat Shane Taylor in a four corner survival match weeks ago. Lethal runs him back first into the turnbuckle. Gresham falls off, but Gresham jumps right back on his back. He will not let go until he's forced to, until Lethal throws him off into a cutter, and from there, it's bouncing off the ropes for another cutter. It's the Lethal Injection for the win, because nobody kicks out of the Lethal Injection.
Exactly. Because when he goes to attempt the Lethal Injection earlier on in this match, you could tell it's not going to work because of any number of factors. The Lethal Injection is like a lot of like, you know, protected or very protected finishing moves, is that when it counts, it's going to work, and it's going to work effectively. And at this particular moment, it's inevitable. That's what's going to happen. Once he goes for it, you know, it's over.
So a terrific match. Well worth the hype. We got what we had advertised. It was amazing. It was great. Lethal looks like the defending fighting champion, a truly heroic figure, willing to give a guy like this a shot and willing to go into a sudden death overtime, even though he doesn't want to and he's exhausted. Lethal looks great as champion. We suspect it's probably going to be him and Matt Taven for the title at Death Before Dishonor. That Matt Lethal doesn't have a title match yet. He's the only champion without a match on the card. So that remains to be seen where he slots in there. But my big question now is, where does Jonathan Gresham go from here?
I want to see ROH, though. I want to see them commit to Gresham, because when I started up again with ROH, watching regularly, Gresham was still like a early card, mid card guy who was losing more matches than he was winning in a rapid, rapid amount of time, proving himself to be every bit as this brand would want one of their like main eventers to be. I would love after this match if they did not just like return Gresham to the mid card and, you know, in fairly forgettable, in matches that are great, but people forget about because they're mid card and like he's not sold in the way that like he deserves, which is main event status, honestly. I don't, as some like Twitter, you know, more snarky folks on Twitter, I don't necessarily believe that like Gresham is too good for ROH. I think Gresham is of the best caliber of ROH, is of a longstanding tradition of performers who have come through ROH that really have made that brand something special. And I think that they need to really commit to selling Gresham as a main eventer at this point. There's a reason why they built an Iron Man match around this, around Lethal and Gresham, and it's not solely because they needed to give Lethal something to do. Like, there was a ton of praise for the matches that they had in house shows and whatever, like prior to this match, to lead up to this match. They built this because of their early performances. I could be totally wrong here. There could have been a long-term goal here, but I think that they saw the magic that happened between Lethal and Gresham in that first match. They saw how good that combination is, and they built something really substantial off of it, partially because Gresham is so spectacular.
So no clue where Lethal or Gresham or a lot of players figure into Death Before Dishonor at this point. It's the next big pay-per-view. It's in 2.5 weeks. So we've got to get some sort of stories, some sort of development going very quickly, very soon, presumably on the next 2 weeks of television, I suppose.
There's been nothing announced for next week's episode, so I'm going to guess that a lot of the conjecture that we have is going to be cleared up after whatever happens next week.
So that's it for this week's show. You can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor.
You can find me on Twitter at ForkedPGH, ForkedPGH.
and you can send any emails to talkinghonor@gmail.com. We will read them on the show. We will try to answer your questions. And next week, I will doubly check to make sure that my microphone is working properly before Emily and I chat for an hour and a half, and I have to delete half the recording because it's incoherent. Thanks for putting up with this episode. Hopefully it won't happen again. Good night.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Now